newstalk.com, History Online, and in your library.
On Newstalk 106 to 108.
Wow, welcome back. We also got an email about a conference which is taking place this weekend, Friday, Saturday and Sunday, on small navies. And it's one of the organisers is Dr. Ian Speller of the Centre for Military History and Strategic Studies at NUI Maynooth. And you could email him at mhss@nuim.ie or just go to the NUIM, the National University of Ireland's Maynooth website, and you'll get details about it. But some great talks, and I see that the Taoiseach Minister for Foreign Affairs, Eamon Gilmore, will be speaking on the Friday evening or the Saturday evening, and then lots of great papers. The opening address on the Friday evening, and then a full day of papers on the Saturday and the Sunday. So if you are free next weekend, well then we definitely recommend you going to that. Of course, if you are interested in military history, which I know a lot of our listeners are. Now, I'm delighted to be joined in studio by Tim Carey, who's the author, along with, well, not a cast of thousands, but quite a few people, along with Jason Bolton, Jerry Clabby and Rob Goodbody, is the author of the book The Martello Towers of Dublin. It's published in hardback by Dunleary Rathdown County Council. It costs €25. It's a brilliant large-scale production with loads of great images. And Tim, thanks a million for joining us.
Thank you.
So let's go straight in with the Martello Towers, because people are familiar with the name and maybe what they look like, but we don't really know. I certainly didn't know how they got the name, when they were built, why they were built. So, given that they are such an iconic part of Dublin, how did they come about?
Yeah, it's funny, you know, they're so iconic, and yet we knew so very little about them. Martello Towers are called Martello Towers because they're named after a place on the northern shores of Corsica, Cape Martello. There was a tower built there in the 16th century, and it sort of meandered along through its own history quite peaceably until the late 18th century. Now, this tower was a round tower on the coast, two cannons on top, defending the bay. Nothing really happened at the tower until the 1790s, when the British decided that they would attack northern Corsica. They attacked it on two occasions, and the first time in 1793, they took it in about half an hour. Quick engagement, the French garrison legged it, basically, and the English took it. They left Corsica then, and they came back a few months later and said, right, we'll take Cape Martello again. But on this occasion, the French didn't leave and decided to defend it. Now, the British had two big warships in the bay, pounding this tower. The tower held out for 2 days, nearly sank one of the ships. When they eventually took it, when they set it on fire, the British were amazed to find that there were only 33 people inside, two of whom had been killed, the rest were uninjured. They just thought it was quite remarkable that it could withstand such a barrage. So they occupied the tower. They were so impressed by it that they took designs of it, did plans of it, and when they left it in 1796, they blew it up because they didn't want to face it again. Now, around the same time, the British occupied Menorca, and they were trying to bolster defences in Menorca. It kind of gets a little bit complicated, so I won't go into it too much, but they decided that they would build Martello-type towers in Menorca. Now, they weren't exactly copies of Cape Martello, which is sort of where the long story comes in, but they were called Martello Towers. So the first Martello Towers, except for the original Cape Martello Tower, were in Menorca. And then in 1803, there was... You have to remember at the time, like, the world was in a state of flux. American independence, French, Spanish, the Dutch, all fighting, and the British Empire trying to defend its interests. Dublin was relatively undefended. In fact, it was pretty much completely undefended. Dublin Castle was no longer really a castle. The city walls no longer fulfilled a function. And they realised that maybe 3,000 troops landing at Killiney Beach could take the capital really undefended. And they got word that the French army were going to land on the east coast of Ireland. So pretty darn quick, they built 28 Martello Tower sites between Bray and Balbriggan. And I say pretty darn quick, all in the space of about 8 months. Once they built them, they turned around and said, okay, lads, who owns the land? So we've just built these towers on. I mean, it was expedited that quickly. And it's funny that the Martello Towers, they were kind of maligned throughout their history to an extent because they never fired a shot in anger. But, I mean, the whole point of them was to act as a deterrent, and obviously the French didn't land, but it was a very real possibility at the time.
And are the 28 still in existence?
They're not, no. There is about 19, I think, the original sites are still in existence. So they're remarkably intact. I mean, you'll have your listeners saying, oh, there's Martello Towers in Cork and Galway and Donegal and Waterford, and there are. And there are Martello Towers in South Africa, in America, in the south coast of England, in Scotland, in Wales. The unique thing, I think, about the Dublin Towers is that they were built to defend a city, a capital city. So, you know, they're an interlocking chain. When they were built, there were very specially chosen positions for them so that they could have overlapping fire. Cluny Bay, which is, for those not familiar with it, deep water, wide beaches, and the deep water goes very close up to the shore. It was very vulnerable to attack. If you landed there after the Martello Towers were built, you had 17 cannon at any given point pretty much firing upon you. They were a very cohesive network of defences around the coast of Dublin. They've grown up with the city, and the city has kind of enveloped them. So, you know, if they go along the south side of the city, along the Rock Road and Sandymount Strand, you'll see the one in Sandymount, but you actually won't see the next one, which is in Williamstown Park, Black Rock Park. You might not even see the next one, which is in Seapoint. The one after that was demolished, and then the next one is Sandy Cove Tower, Joyce's Tower, which again, it's along the coast, it's away from the main road, and people don't realise just how close these are, except everyone has an association in Dublin pretty much with one of the Martello Towers. They know one visually. They go to the coast, if they go to the beach, they'll see a Martello Tower. And they've almost become synonymous with the city. So I think that's why the Dublin story is particularly unique and particularly interesting.
And thanks to James Joyce and Ulysses, they're famous to the literary world all around the world. And what was his connection to the one in Sandy Cove, and why is the first chapter set there?
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, he was only there, I think, 4 or 5 nights, but he's immortalised the Martello Towers. He was invited there by Oliver St. John Gogarty, writer, and he rented the tower from the military, and he was trying to make the tower a centre of arts and learning and literature and sort of, you know, a cool place to hang out, I suppose. And Joyce arrived there. He had a miserable 4 or 5 nights, really unhappy. Anyone who read the first chapter of Ulysses is really based on his own experiences there, left miserable. But I think he just saw the beauty of the tower and the symbolism of the tower and just the whole setting of the tower. I mean, standing on the stairhead, you know, and thrice gravely crossing the tower and looking out at the snot green sea and the scrotum tightening sea. And, you know, it's just, there's no better place really to start a novel. And he did immortalize the towers in literature and makes, you know, the Martello Towers, you know, almost indistinguishable from Joyce. So he's done a great service for the Dublin Martello Towers. That's still open. Obviously, the volunteers have been keeping that open, but there are other Martello Towers that are still open. Neil O'Donoghue on Cluny Hill has spent a considerable sum of his own money restoring the tower to its original condition and it welcomes visitors by appointment. And other people like Simone Stevenson and Bartra have done up the tower as a kind of a residence. The Sutton Tower has been done up as a residence, and they've all kind of had different sort of histories, and you know, they've been tea rooms, caretaker residence, a place for homing pigeons, a football changing room, and you know, these buildings which have just become sort of, you know, enmeshed in this suburban life, really have a kind of, each of them has their own interesting little story to tell.
And talk to us about the specifications of them then, because they were built with a military purpose in mind. Are there any other special features?
Well, I mean, when you start looking at them, they're all quite similar. There are things like each part of the tower has its own function. I mean, it's a direct military installation. They're not there for it to be pretty. The ground floor would have held the cannon and the gunpowder, and that would have been very well protected and, you know, precautions taken to avoid sparks. Then you would have a trap door going up to the first floor where you would haul up the ammunition. And then you would have a murder hole over the door, which was also called a machicolation. And you can always spot where the original front door of the Martello Tower was, because you'll see a little bit protruding out at the top, and that's where you could look down. The soldiers on the rooftop could look down and fire on anyone coming in the front door. The windows are small to obviously stop any direct hits into the tower. There's a staircase within the tower, but the staircase is actually within the thickness of these 8 or 9 foot walls. So you walk around these spiral stairs, And then when you get to the top, I mean, the whole thing was about, this is a tower to hold a gun, or sometimes two guns. And we've, there's two towers have replica cannons, working replica cannons, and you can see them in action the odd time throughout the year. And it's kind of, it's a lovely sight, you know, they'll put in, we have one in Dunleary Rat Down County Council, and then Neil on Cliney Hill, and, you know, flame about 15 feet comes out. It's, you forget that these are, you know, serious military installations. They're the intercontinental ballistic missiles of their day, warding off the French. And
I think one was fired for the book launch.
That's correct, yes. We fired it twice. It was kind of nerve-wracking because when you haven't fired a cannon before, you don't really know what's going to happen. Now, we got very professional people to do it and we did all of that, but still, you are kind of holding your breath saying, oh, I hope this doesn't go wrong.
Especially when the French ambassador was there.
Correct, yeah.
So tell me, how did the project come about? Because it was, I think, a collaboration between, was it Fingal and Rathdown County Councils?
It just came about because you just looked at these towers and said, well, what do we know about them? Okay, Joyce stayed in one, and that makes it sort of, you know, famous. And then Martello, it's a place in Italy, and that's really all we, you know, it was actually wrong. And we commissioned Jason Bolton to do the initial historic research, and he came back with just a story that we realised people didn't know, we didn't know, and other people didn't know. So we did an exhibition on it, and then there was such a response to the exhibition that we decided we would do the book, and just to tell, you know, really what is just a kind of unique story, and it brings in all facets of Irish life and the development of Dublin and, you know, people's own area of Dublin. So that's where it sort of came from, and we've been kind of delighted with the way it's been going. And, you know, we're kind of championing Martello Towers, you know, and you feel... I think people sort of say, oh, people don't want to know all the detail, but I think people do want to know the detail. I mean, that's what they're really interested in. If it's interesting detail that tells an interesting story, that's what people want. And, you know, our mission is to kind of, you know, popularise the story of Martello Towers and show how important they are and how important their future are.
Okay, well, it is a great book and lots of beautiful illustrations in it. The book is, well, and this is especially for Francis, who texted in wanting to know the name of the book. It is called The Martello Towers of Dublin. The authors are Jason Bolton, Tim Carey, Jerry Clabby and Rob Goodbody. It does cost €25 in hardback, and it seems well worth the money for all the great stuff you get in it. And my thanks to Tim Carey, one of the authors, for joining me tonight. Thanks, Tim.
Thank you.
We'll be back with more Talking History on News Talk as we talk to Stephen Benedict.